I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Crime with Holly. It's your host, Holly, and I am here today with a tragic unsolved murder. I say it often when covering these unsolved cases that I know that some listeners just don't enjoy listening to unsolved cases. However, for me, there is so much passion and reason behind doing this podcast. I feel like these unsolved cases deserve the most attention because they are unsolved, and there are people among us living their lives knowing what happened, knowing that they did something evil to someone and is currently getting away with it. Someone knows something, and it just takes one person to be brave enough to come forward with information to help these families get closure. Today's case is on the murder of Emily Pike. This is a very, very recent case, and so for that reason, information is fairly limited, and also there's a lot of differing things being reported about this case, so I tried my very best to kind of weed through all of the information and get things the most accurate that I could. But despite it being pretty limited, I just feel it's so incredibly important to get this information out there while it's still potentially fresh in people's minds, and also to bring awareness to Emily's story. She was a Native American young girl, and as we know with these missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls, they don't get nearly enough attention as they should. Despite the fact that they're being murdered and going missing at terrifying and alarming rates. But before we dive into the details that is currently known on Emily's story, let me just first say that I am fighting for my life at the tail end of a very serious chest cold and serious head congestion. So things with my voice and my tempo might be a little bit off because I am like fighting to breathe. So please forgive me for that. Secondly, I also want to say thank you guys for giving me some grace last weekend. I did not get an episode out. However, I was spending a lot of family time. It was the last week of school. I just did not have the time to get everything organized and situated. So I appreciate you guys bearing with me on that. And also, last but not least, allow me to give a shout out to my dear friend Krista, who just signed up for my Patreon. I have known Krista since middle school, and when her name popped up in my notifications that she signed up for my Patreon, it was such a sweet surprise. So thank you, Krista, so much for always being in my corner and cheering your girl on. Welcome to the Patreon family. If you guys would like to join the family, you can sign up for just $2 a month and listen to every single episode ad-free. Check the link in the description of this episode for more information or visit patreon.com/crimewithholly to sign up. All right, so without further ado, let's kick this off and get into the details of the tragic and gruesome murder of Emily Pike. Emily Pike was born on May 16th, 2010, Emily and I actually share a birthday, which means that she would have just turned 15 on the 16th. Unfortunately, her life was taken before she could turn 15, and as a 14-year-old girl, she was known for her big, beautiful smile, bubbly personality, and joyful spirit. She was a member of the San Carlos Apache tribe and grew up with her cousins, brother, mother, and grandmother in a small house on the reservation in southeast Arizona. She's been described by her family as very soft-spoken, kind-hearted, sweet, a lover of arts and crafts, and she loved animals as well, especially her cat that was named Millie. Emily's favorite color was pink, and she also enjoyed the character Hello Kitty. Emily was making plans for her future and was looking forward to attending high school the following year. She wanted to go off to college and make a future for herself, but still didn't quite know what exactly she wanted to do as far as a career goes. Emily was your typical teenage girl in the sense that she loved her friends. She had crushes on boys, she took guitar lessons, and she enjoyed experimenting with makeup. AZ Central reported that Emily was close to her five siblings and many cousins, and she had aunts and uncles that lived in Colorado and Utah who she loved and adored. She had spent time visiting both of her aunts and uncles in Colorado and Utah, and they doted on her, taking her to the malls, water parks, zoos, and movies. And while Emily's story sounds like she was having a happy and healthy life, things weren't as amazing as they seemed, and she had been a victim of sexual abuse. Though the details aren't heavily known, ABC 15 reported that federal law enforcement agents had investigated two sexual assault allegations from Emily in 2023. And it was said that after the second report had been made, tribal social services took custody of Emily and placed her into foster care for the next 18 months. This foster situation also included a group home in Mesa, Arizona, which is over 100 miles from her home on the reservation. I will say that it's been reported that one of the reasons the tribal social services took custody of Emily was due to her struggling with some mental health and self-harm, and they took her to provide her with better services and things that just weren't readily available for her on the reservation. Now, a lot of the news articles and fellow creators I've seen cover this case didn't name the group home in order to protect the children that are still living there. And even the group home's operator, Elizabeth Morales, has asked that the name of the home remain private, again, to protect the children who are there. This group home has fallen under a lot of public scrutiny, which we will get into. But I just want to go ahead and follow suit and not release the name, even though it is public information, because there are still children who are there and they deserve their privacy. I do want to reiterate here, though, that Emily wasn't in the care of Department of Child Services. This group home does have children who are in the care of DCS, but for Emily, she was in the care of tribal social services, and that does matter and make a difference with this case. So just keep that in mind. It is important to also note here that though Emily's home life isn't really known, her family still was a part of her life and have been vocal about fighting for justice. I do know that at the time of Emily's death, her father was incarcerated for criminal damage. I had read a couple different things about it. One of them said arson, but none of that really pertains to Emily's case, and he still was very much involved in his daughter's life and loved and still loves her today. And with Emily gone in this group home, her family still spoke to her on the regular. So they all were just very much involved in her life. They were ready for her to come home at some point, but they wanted to make sure that she was getting the help that she needed. And it seemed like this group home at that time was going to be the best option. Emily was close with her cousins, and she had spoken to them just a few weeks before she went missing about wanting to go shopping when she got home. It's been reported that Emily had been talking about how she would be home the following month. However, I haven't seen it officially said if that was true, if she really was going to be released, or if this was just something that she was kind of hoping for. Given that nothing has been officially reported that she was due to be released back home, I'm going to guess that this was just Emily having some hopeful thinking. On January 27th of this year, so 2025, at around 8:20 p.m., the group home made a call to the Mesa Police Department to report that Emily was missing. An old roommate of Emily's told azfamily.com that on that night, Emily had left the group home to visit a boy that she had met while taking guitar lessons, and that Emily was able to sneak out of the group home because a church group was there doing activities with the kids. So there was a big distraction that was happening, and it created the perfect opportunity for her to leave unnoticed. Witnesses came forward and said that they had seen Emily walking down Mesa Drive and McKellips Road sometime around 7:45 p.m., and after that, she was never seen again. Now, I will say there are surveillance footage in the area. However, things haven't been released publicly yet on, you know, those videos and if they caught anything. This is just what we know for now. It is unknown if she truly was going to meet someone or if she was running away to go back home to the reservation. And of course, we don't know if whoever picked Emily up was known to her or not. Cell phones for the girls at the group home weren't allowed, and so if Emily had spoken and made plans to meet with someone, it had to have been on the public phone lines at the home. And so if there are phone records showing she called someone, that information hasn't been made public yet. At first, I'm not sure how much had been done for Emily, and that's because she had previously ran away from the group home in the past. So initially, she was listed as a runaway teen, opposed to an actual missing child. I know that it's been reported that Emily had ran away from this group home like 3 or 4 times, and each time that she was found, she would tell the police that she didn't want to go back to the group home. And Emily wasn't the only child who ran away from this group home either. She would often be accompanied by 1 or 2 other girls, and each time police would find them and take them back. In September 2024, Emily and another girl were picked up by the Mesa police after running off, and they told them, quote, "They did not want to go back to the group home because they make them work by scrubbing walls, baseboards, windowsills, and even getting on their hands and knees to scrub the grout on the tile," end quote. During a different runaway incident where police found Emily, she said that she didn't want to go back because it, quote, "makes her uncomfortable when the staff gets into arguments with other juveniles in the home," end quote. I cannot speak on this particular group home or what it's like in general to live in a group home. But from a lot of the stories I've seen over the years of researching different cases where group homes have been involved, they aren't always the most pleasant place to live, just to put it lightly. Not only are you surrounded by people who have been exposed to some seriously traumatic things and have a lot of things going on for them, they seem like they often are understaffed, maybe overworked, and the living conditions isn't always the best. Just doing a quick search online, you will find endless stories of awful things that happen to some youth in group homes. And imprintnews.org reported that group homes can actually cause harm to fostered youth. Again, I cannot speak from experience and only speak on what I have read from other people who have lived that life. But it's easy to see how a lot of these children in group homes could want to go home and not want to go back. And I just want to say, just to make it clear, I am not bashing group homes. I'm not bashing this specific group home. I'm not bashing the system at all. Just simply stating what is being said. I do believe that there are likely group homes out there that are amazing for some troubled youth and have helped guide kids back to the right path. But it does seem like the majority of them, based on the experiences that are shared online, are not a positive place to be. And it seems like Emily was unhappy and uncomfortable with her living situation. Since her disappearance, this group home has been under a lot of public scrutiny, and it was revealed that in the last 3 years, the Mesa Police Department had taken 31 missing persons reports from this home alone. I will say that this information has been twisted a ton on social media, and you may have seen this floating around out there when Emily's case first started being reported on. I saw people on TikTok and other social media platforms saying that this group home had 30 missing kids that had never been found, and that's just simply not the case. They had made 31 reports of children going missing, all of which most were found after they had run away. Many of these reports were for the same child who repeatedly ran away. A new report has to be made every single time a child runs away, even if it was the same child multiple times. So while 31 reports is a crazy amount, these reports were allegedly for only 18 children, which that's still a lot of kids. Don't get me wrong, that should not be overlooked. But all of these kids had been found alive and well, except for two. The first being a 17-year-old girl named Veronica Cruz, who went missing on May 18th, 2024, and then Emily Pike, whose story ended very tragically. So getting back to the story, I'm assuming that on this January 27th, police felt like Emily was trying to run away again. Now, in the state of Arizona, the law states that when a child is in state custody and they go missing, they need to notify the authorities within 24 hours. But Emily was under the care of tribal social services, and apparently that law does not apply to them. However, the group home did call the police, and then the police did their part to notify the National Crime Information Center about her disappearance on that night. But after that, nobody thought to notify Emily's family. It would have been the group home's job to notify Emily's tribal caseworker that she was missing, who then in turn should have notified Emily's family. But for whatever reason, this slipped their minds, and Emily's family had no idea that she was missing for an entire week. Now, if you ask me, if the police were actually investigating Emily's case thoroughly, like they should have been, you would think that their first stop would be to her home on the reservation to see if she had made it there or if her family knew anything. But clearly, that was not the case. And again, even though they reported her to the NCIC, I don't think police fully believed she was at risk and believed that she was just going to turn up again like she had all the times before. I can't help but feel frustrated for Emily's family over all of this. Whether she was a runaway or she was missing, like legitimately missing, they should have looked into it. They should have crossed their T's, dotted their I's, done everything within their power to find her. It's just unacceptable. Her family could have been doing their part at that point to spread the word and raise red flags that something wasn't right. But instead, a whole week went by and they had no idea that she was gone. Also because they had zero information about who took Emily, who she could have been with, and because she was listed as a runaway, there was no Amber Alert that went out. Which, as we know, there are certain criteria that has to be met for an Amber Alert to be issued for a missing child. And usually that includes a description of a car and or a suspect. I don't take criticizing the police or authorities lightly. And I really think that this case was a massive eye-opener for those down in Mesa. But in my opinion, it seems like everyone just assumed immediately that she was a runaway, that she would surface up again eventually, and they didn't put much effort into their search. After learning Emily's fate, many people were demanding change. And though this case is very recent, I will say that Emily has already made a huge impact. But as a young Indigenous girl, Emily was already considered high risk. As we know from other MMIW cases I've covered, Indigenous women and girls go missing and are murdered at a disproportionately higher rate. Indigenous women and girls have a murder rate that is 10 times higher than any other ethnicities. And murder is the third, let me just say that again, murder is the third leading cause of death for Indigenous women and girls. She was at high risk, not only for the fact that she was a 14-year-old girl wandering the streets at night alone, but she also was high risk because she was Indigenous. No matter how many times that Emily had ran away before, each time she should have been properly looked for. And that goes for every missing child. No matter if they are a runaway, they are still a child. We should be looking for them and doing our part to protect them. All of the T's should be crossed and all of the I's should be dotted when it comes to a proper search for children. And unfortunately, that just wasn't the case. I know that resources can be so limited for the police department, and it's easy to assume that these troubled youth who've ran away in the past will turn up again, but clearly that's not always the case, and for that reason alone, 100% efforts should always be given for these missing kids. The right hand needs to talk to the left. The Mesa police should have contacted the tribal police. The group home should have communicated with her social worker. There's just a lot of things that should have been done. And again, I don't like criticizing law enforcement. I am very pro law enforcement. I love them dearly. I know they're very hard workers most of the time. I know that they try their best most of the time, but it does feel like policies and procedures could be improved to be better. So let's talk about what we know about what happened to Emily. And I just want to say just a quick warning here, listener discretion is advised because the details are brutal and tragic.
Five years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
On April 14th, 2025, 14-year-old Emily Pike had been missing for nearly 3 weeks. A day that was meant to be filled with love and affection was instead filled with the tragic truth of what happened to Emily. Officers from the Gila County Sheriff's Office responded to a call that suspicious garbage bags had been found off milepost 277 along Highway US 60 near a remote forest road. This area was just outside of Globe, Arizona, and when officers arrived on scene, they found several heavy-duty black trash bags. And inside those bags, they found some of Emily's dismembered remains. Now, this area is a very remote area, and it seems like someone had just pulled over into this secluded spot, assumed that it would be the perfect place to drop Emily's remains before hopping back on the highway. This spot where Emily was found was over 100 miles east of where she was last seen, near that group home. And interestingly, it was on the way towards her reservation, which led many, myself included, to thinking that maybe that was where Emily was headed. As we know, she was telling her cousins that she would be back within a month. Had Emily been hitchhiking and picked up by the wrong person? What is absolutely awful about this case is that Emily's family was not properly notified about this discovery. Nobody knocked on her mother's door to tell her they found her remains. She didn't get a phone call, but instead she found out through social media when the Gila County Sheriff's Department accidentally leaked photos on their social media of large garbage bags that had contained Emily's dismembered body. Along with these photos, there was also an internal memo that was only meant for law enforcement's eyes that got posted as well. And in this memo, it detailed the horrific and graphic details of the condition of Emily's body. And it stated that an unidentified female was found dismembered in contractor-style trash bags, with a head and torso in one bag, and legs were found in a separate one. It was also noted that the head and face showed visible signs of trauma. When this information was posted, it did not specifically name Emily as the victim that was found. However, it was pretty easy to put the puzzle pieces together and figure out who was who in this situation. And while these details are shocking and horrifying and graphic to hear, just put yourself in Emily's mother's shoes. She learned all of the graphic details from a Facebook post at the same time as everyone else who followed that page. I cannot fathom how such a mistake like this could have been made. It's absolutely unacceptable, and even more unacceptable is the fact that no real apology has been issued, from my understanding, that is, to Emily's family. The Gila County Sheriff's Office had posted a second memo on February 26 that discusses the remains of an unidentified female having been found. It stated that the Gila County Sheriff's Office and the San Carlos Apache Tribal Police were investigating it, but due to the circumstances, it was decided that further information needed to be investigated before any public notification. It also stated that there was no indication that there was an active threat to the community. And lastly, it mentioned that information that was posted on Facebook was intended only for law enforcement agencies and was leaked, and that they are working hard to get a positive identification and to find any information and evidence. What this memo lacks is an apology, if you ask me. While I get it's meant for official business, I personally feel like acknowledging the wrongdoing and apologizing for any distress it may have caused the Pike family or members of the community would have still been acceptable in such an official memo. But what do I know? Also, the fact that this memo states that there is no indication that there is an active threat to the community blows my freaking mind. How could you even assume that? Here you have a child who was not only kidnapped, but was brutally attacked, sustained great trauma to her head and face, and then was dismembered and dumped along the side of the road like trash. With no idea who did this, how can you just assume that this deranged person wouldn't do it again? That is just mind-boggling to me. And honestly, everyone in the community felt the same. Clearly, this person obviously is very sick in the head and is capable of evil, evil things. But yet, there's no threat to the community. I just don't get it. The following day, Gila County Sheriff's Office announced that the remains were positively identified as belonging to Emily Pike. And people were outraged in the comments. They pointed out the fact that police are saying there is no threat to the public. People in the public also commented about the fact that Mesa Police Department treated this as a runaway situation. People want answers, and rightfully so. From my understanding, there are no suspects or persons of interest in this case, unless they are just keeping that information close to the vest at this time. I know that it's been reported that Emily's arms and hands are still missing, despite endless efforts to locate the rest of her remains. They searched extensively around the area where her remains were found, but came up empty-handed. It is believed that Emily had been murdered and dismembered somewhere else, and if law enforcement could just find where it happened, they may be able to piece together more of what happened to Emily and who did it. But right now, it really feels like they're just searching for a needle in a haystack. Of course, I'm sure more things are happening behind the scenes that haven't been made public. I would assume that the construction-grade garbage bags are being tested and further analyzed for clues and details. Potentially, they will be able to work out where those bags were sold and when, but all of this stuff takes a considerable amount of time. The Gila County Sheriff's Office is not the only one working on this case either. And while they're leading it up because that's where Emily's remains were found, they also have the help of the FBI, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and the San Carlos Apache Tribal Police. It really does seem like they're all a unified front and working hard to figure out what happened to this sweet young girl. According to Fox 10, the San Carlos Apache tribe initially offered a $75,000 reward for information leading to an arrest of the person or persons responsible for Emily's murder. The FBI has now matched that offer with an additional $75,000 reward, bringing the combined total to $150,000 for someone who can provide verifiable information that leads them to the person responsible. Since the announcement of Emily's tragic murder and the way that she was found, hundreds have gathered for vigils and marches in her honor. People are demanding justice. They're demanding that we keep saying her name and keep fighting to raise awareness on the MMIW crisis. Vigil goers chanted her name, they held up signs that read "Justice for Emily Pike" and "No More Stolen Sisters." And a memorial was placed on the corner of Mesa Drive and McKellips Road where she was last seen. Now, I will say, when this story first broke, I did see it a lot on social media. I'm not sure if that's because I live in Nevada, so I'm pretty close to Arizona, or if it was because people were sharing it a ton. But I do feel like this case has been given more media attention and has been really shining a light on the MMIW epidemic. And while it was getting more attention when it first happened, it does seem like the interest in this case has somewhat fizzled out as there hasn't really been any new information, which I find so unfortunate because this was a teenage girl who was brutally murdered. We should still be talking about this on the daily. But like I often say in my Missing Mondays episodes, when the hype of these cases dies down and people go back to their daily lives, these families feel forgotten. And I want Emily's family to know that her story will not be forgotten, and I will continue to share until they get answers and someone has been brought to justice. On March 29th, 2025, a memorial was held at the San Carlos High School. Hundreds of people came out to pay their respects, and Emily's brother, cousins, and members of the Red Rum Motorcycle Club carried her pink and purple casket inside. Attendees were dressed in black, red, and pink, and her casket was painted with her favorite color flowers and a Hello Kitty character on top. As I mentioned earlier, her father was incarcerated at the time of her murder, but he was granted leave to attend her wake the day before. But according to AZ Central, he was unable to be present at the actual memorial and burial the following day. It was a beautiful memorial by all accounts, and the amount of people that showed up to show their support was incredible. I can only imagine how much that meant to the Pike family. ABC 15 reported on March 11th that DCS opened a licensing inquiry into the group home that Emily lived before going missing. A spokesperson for DCS told ABC 15 in an email, quote, "At this time, the department does not believe any action taken or not taken by the group home caused the terrible outcome in this case. We have opened a licensing inquiry to determine whether appropriate steps were taken by the group home during this incident," end quote. Now, after this was announced, a manager from that group home answered questions for True Crime Arizona about safety protocols and protection at the home. And the way that this person answered these questions had a lot of people feeling even more uncomfortable with the way in which the group home ran things. And honestly, it seems like this person tried to kind of dodge some of the questions that were asked. And I will link this in the description of this episode, so if you want to read all of the questions and the answers for yourself. But the biggest thing that people kept pointing out is the fact that the manager was asked why staff doesn't go search for runaway kids. And their reply was, quote, "We are a standard group home. We are a hands-off facility. We will never put our hands on a child. The only reason to ever touch a child is to keep them safe from harm, for example, from running into oncoming traffic when upset. We have been known to call Mesa police and stay on the phone and follow our children until police assist us, which is always immediately when our children are in danger to themselves or others," end quote. And people feel like this manager was just trying to avoid answering the question because the question literally had nothing to do with touching kids or anything of that nature. So it felt almost like this manager was trying to skate by with blanket statements and not truly own up to mistakes made. And again, I'm not trying to bash this group home. They did immediately contact police as soon as they realized that Emily was missing. You know, I'm sure that they have certain protocols and procedures that they have to follow, and they can't just all go out searching for missing children, given that they have other children in the home. So I don't want to bash them because I really don't know enough information about the way that they run things. But there are a lot of people who are really talking poorly about this group home. So just kind of maybe do your own research, form your own opinions, and go from there about your feelings for what happened inside that group home. This group home seems like they've been very cooperative and doing their best in all of this, and so I'm sure that they have been advised probably legally not to say certain things or answer certain types of questions. So again, kind of take that for what you will when you read over this link if you choose to read it. I do hope, though, that they maybe look over their policies and procedures and find things that maybe they could improve at the group home. And their first that I would suggest is their lack of contact with Emily's family. Her family or her caseworker should have been the first person or people that they called after reporting her missing to the police. And they didn't do that. And I just can't help but be frustrated by that part of this story. And while this case is tragic, I want to just say it has shined a light on the MMIW and the unfortunate statistics that go along with that. The community has really gathered together to bring awareness, and people across the country are showing their love and support and chanting Emily's name. A mural was painted for Emily. Search efforts are still being conducted by community members and volunteers. Vigils and marches are still happening. Flowers and banners have been laid where Emily's remains were found. And those within this area are fighting for answers for Emily. According to ABC 15, on May 14th, a legislative hearing was held at the Arizona State Capitol, and the focus was on Emily Pike's care and group home protocol. DCS, San Carlos Apache leadership, the Mesa Police Department, and members of Emily's family were all in attendance. Discussions were had about policies, procedures, improving communications, ways to improve group homes as a whole, and their security systems, among many other things that they discussed. And I just want to say that I'm really happy to hear that these conversations are happening. It really feels like they're taking accountability for what had happened and are trying to do better and be better. I feel like often with these MMIW cases, they get swept under the rug, but it seems like this time they're trying to take action and do better. On May 13th, Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs signed House Bill 2281, also now known as Emily's Law. According to Fox 10 Phoenix, this bill would establish the Turquoise Alert System as a way to issue and coordinate alerts for missing tribal members who are under the age of 65. So think Amber Alert for Indigenous people. Governor Hobbs was quoted saying, "While this bill was being considered in the state legislature, we learned of the senseless murder of this beautiful 14-year-old Emily, a member of the San Carlos Apache tribe. No parent, no tribal community should lose their child, their young member, to violence," end quote. While the law won't bring Emily back, Governor Hobbs said that she and others hope the Turquoise Alert will prevent other such losses. After signing this bill, Governor Hobbs also announced that the state would be adding $25,000 from the Department of Public Safety Anti-Racketeering Fund to the two other rewards from Emily's tribe and the FBI. So the total reward amount is now $175,000 for information leading to an arrest of a person or persons responsible for Emily's death. Unfortunately, that is all the information that is really out there on this case. It's still so new and so recent, and I do hope that the police have more information that they're looking into and investigating further. I'm assuming they've followed up on all leads and have looked into that boy that she met at the guitar lessons that she might have been leaving to go visit. There are a lot of hands on deck for this case, and so I'm hopeful that answers will come sooner rather than later. I hope that they can find the rest of her remains and maybe they'll be able to find new evidence from her hands. I also hope that whoever did this to this sweet young girl is brought to justice soon. I can only imagine the pain and the heartache her family feels knowing that the monster who did this is still out there roaming free. This is such a new case, and while all of the information isn't readily available, I just felt like it was so important to talk about this case because someone knows something. If you or anyone you know has information on what happened to Emily, you can contact the Gila County Sheriff's Office at 928-200-2352. I will have that number as well as other numbers you can call to get in touch with the Bureau of Indian Affairs Special Agents and Tribal Police Detectives if you'd rather speak to them opposed to the Sheriff's Office. And those numbers will be in the description of this episode. If you guys could also share this episode with anyone, the more awareness on Emily's case, just it's going to be for the better. She deserves justice, and the evil person who did this deserves to be behind bars. I will be watching this case like a hawk for updates, and I will let you guys know as soon as I see anything new about this case. Make sure that you guys are a part of my private Facebook group by searching Crime with Holly Podcast Discussion Group. In there, I share all information and pictures pertaining to the cases that I cover, and I also encourage all members to share all things true crime. If you'd like to keep up with what I've got going on in life, you can find me on Instagram at CrimeAHolly. And if you would like more true crime content, you can follow me on TikTok at crimewithholly.podcast. Thank you guys again for bearing with me as I am fighting for my life with this dang cold. Hopefully next week I won't sound so winded, I won't sound so rough and gruff, but who knows at this point. So until next time, y'all, be aware and take care. Bye-bye.